Welcome to American Players Theater Talkbacks to Go. I'm Buzz Kemper, and I invite you to take a walk up the hill with Orange Schroeder and me as Orange chats with director Ken Albers and actor Colleen Madden about APT's production of Molly Sweeney by Brian Friel.
We are speaking with Colleen Madden, who plays the title role in Molly Sweeney, and with director Ken Albers, who is directing the play by Brian Friel. And this is an unusual play because there are not very many characters and there's not a lot of action.
No, there's three characters and there's no action.
So what makes it a fascinating play, Ken?
Well, it reminds me of that old Japanese film called Rashomon, which is about a single event seen through the eyes of a whole bunch of people. And depending upon who's telling the story, the details of the story differ. So here we have three characters. Molly Sweeney, that Colleen plays, and it's based on a true story, is a lady who's now 41 years old in Ireland. She was born sighted, but she lost her sight at 10 years of age.
10 months.
10 months,
ten
sorry,
months
10
age.
Months of age, yes. And she is now married to her husband, who's another character in the play, Frank. And Frank has heard of this doctor, an ophthalmologist, in the home in the town where they all live, which is a made-up town called Ballybeg in northern Donegal, Ireland. And he goes to see the doctor to see if there's any possibility that he might be able to help Molly see again. And the event of the surgeries and what happens because of the surgeries constitutes the entirety of the play, told in monologues by the three characters interlaced with each other, so that you get a sense of Molly's perception of the story, her husband's perception, and the doctor's perception. They don't look at each other throughout the play. They have no scenes together. They don't speak to each other. It's all just interlaced monologues. So it's a fascinating structure, and it's been very interesting to rehearse, because it's like three one-man shows out there. In some ways, it's easier because we can always get somebody who's not working in another show.
In one
another
of the
show.
Other 9-8 plays, yeah.
But during rehearsals, we have to kind of decide, well, how's the best way to do this? What's the best way to help people accomplish this? And day-to-day basis, we may have an idea, well, let's do this today or let's do that today, or let's just run it twice and go home, or let's just give you time off to work on the words yourself, or you know, whatever. I mean, it's a compelling play. I mean, Friel is a great writer, so this is a really compelling language play, and I think it's going to surprise people. But at the same time, as Colleen and I have talked, I'm not so sure people know what to expect.
No, I would be surprised if people who are coming, who bought the tickets, really know what they're going to see, because we mostly each of us sits in a chair, and we occasionally get out of our chairs to move in a circle around our chairs, but that's it. I mean, we have this very tight little world, which I think is interesting, because I think that that is what Friel is saying about us, is that we have our tight little worlds from which we judge the circumstances around us. And it's very difficult for us to see through somebody else's eyes, so to speak. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating.
And did you have to do any special preparation for playing a woman who has been... Is she blind in the beginning of the play, or she has gotten her sight?
Well, you don't know. I mean, the audience doesn't know. She does gain sight, limited sight, partial sight, through the operation. And at the end of the play, although she's had this operation that has given her sight, she has gone through a psychological transformation so that she no longer believes that she can see. So she both can see and can't see. And she has to find a comfort, a way of she has to build her own world between fantasy and reality by the end.
And did you experiment with blindness at all in preparation?
Not really. One of the things I like that Friel did, very clearly he states at the beginning something like no shenanigans about blindness. He doesn't want...
No white canes.
No groping. No staggering. As he said, there's a trace of a vacancy in the eyes. So I went to YouTube. Thank God for the internet. You know, I mean, I have some acquaintances in town here who are blind, but mostly it was easy to really go to YouTube and look at some interviews with blind people, and that was useful. And I'm still working on that. I was just saying to Ken today, this play, working on this play, has made me realize that I think in a very visual way. Even when we're rehearsing and I'm speaking the text, I can see in my mind the shape of the paragraph. And Ken was really urging us to stop thinking about paragraphs and really think of it as an ongoing story, linear. But I find as I'm working too, my eye catches a seat or a person and I linger, my eyes linger. So I'm really trying at this point, I haven't cracked that yet, but I'm really trying to have my vision be in a smaller bubble than my voice is. Have my voice go out and my vision stay in.
And the other two characters, obviously, the two men are sighted.
Yes, they are. Yes.
What are the challenges for them in their roles?
Well, Molly's husband, Frank, who is unemployed, and who is, what was the word I was thinking of today? I don't remember. But anyway, he moves from job to job. He moves from thing to thing. He's always on the lookout for something. He doesn't know what it is, but he wants to make cheese from the milk of Iranian goats, you know, and he's worked other places, and he's done this, and he's passionate about everything, and he's an autodidact. He's self-taught, and he loves the fact that he's been self-taught, that he's taught himself. So the issue for that character is really, okay, you married this blind woman. She gets her sight. She doesn't get her sight. What then? What happens now? What changes? What does she get? What do you get? The doctor is a drunk. He was a top-notch ophthalmic surgeon for years. One of the four horsemen, as he refers to himself, the Young Turks, you know, these people who are brilliant. And he's fallen on hard times through his own life situations. So this is his opportunity to reestablish himself as a top-notch surgeon. And what's involved in that for him? And what does it mean if he either succeeds or fails? So it's, as I said at the director's chat, this play always reminds me of be very careful what you wish for, you know, because you may get it. Mm-hmm. And it may not be the thing you thought it was going to be, and you may not be the thing that you want.
It will change your life.
It will change your life. Whichever way it goes, it's going to change your life.
In the way you would have wished.
But it is it is fascinating stuff. It's a fascinating structure. He has another three-character play called The Faith Healer that he's written, but those characters are on stage alone for long monologues. They're not out there together. So he's altered that structure for this piece, and it'll be very interesting to see how audiences really respond to it. I think they'll be hooked, but you know, they may find themselves going, well, this isn't really like APT, you know, what's going on here? But we'll see.
And I understand that one of Friel's most common themes is loneliness. It sounds like all three of these characters are isolated in some way. And mm-hmm. I like what Colleen said about trying to send her voice out but keep her vision in. And it mm-hmm. sounds like her husband has the opposite thing, where
yes,
he's completely
yes.
outturned but not inward turned.
Yes, yes.
How does he explore loneliness in other ways in this play?
Well, what I love about Molly, I think what makes her lovable and what makes her an attractive character is She very early in life, when she is not even a year old, she becomes blind, totally blind. She can see the direction from which light comes, and that's all. So she understands from a very young age that she has limitations. So she goes through life accepting that she has limitations. And because she has accepted these limitations, she's really at peace with the world around her. So she, throughout much of her life, is not lonely at all. She experiences life as it comes to her, and it's enough. And I love that about this play. I think most of us are looking for what's wrong. What's wrong in my life? Why don't I feel good about myself? And I feel like the other two characters are stuck in that. What can I fix? What have I done wrong? What would I like to make up for? And they're not experiencing life as it comes to them. They're constantly either going back in the past or into the future and trying to fix something that's gone wrong in the past or make something better in the future. And unfortunately, Molly gets caught up in their hopes and dreams. And I think that she does live in the end in a world that maybe ostensibly seems quite lonely, but again, she's used to limitations and making a world that is comfortable and peaceful despite the limitations.
Friel is also Irish. He lives on an island, and it's not a rich island, you know. And one of the plays of his that I really like is his adaptation of Three Sisters by Chekhov. And somebody observed that it's so brilliant because, like the Russians stuck out there in the winter forever, Friel is stuck in Ireland for it. He knows exactly how these people feel when they have to leave the comfort of Moscow, the huge city, and go to this tiny little town out in the hinterlands. And they get lonely. Of course they do. So I think it's part. Somebody said the other day, talking about Irish music, what is it about? What do the Irish have that makes their music so wonderful? And the answer was, no, it's what they don't have that makes their music so wonderful. You know, so I think that loneliness is part and parcel of who he is. And if you look at pictures of him, it's the quintessential face of Ireland. I mean, it's craggy, and it's weathered, and it's tough. It's tough. So, but yeah, I think Colleen's absolutely right about Molly in that sense. And the men are lonely too in their own way, because what they have is their success or not, or something else, but that doesn't fulfill them. It doesn't make them happy. They're as lonely as anybody can be.
I think that loneliness is a lack of fulfillment. I don't think that we all know that you can feel very lonely in a crowd or feel complete by yourself. So I think loneliness is a lack of fulfillment. And Molly, for most of her life, is fulfilled. And these other men are not.
And I certainly know that he's known as being one of the best Irish playwrights today and very immersed in the Irishness of his situation, as Ken mentioned, which brings to mind the Irish music that's being used for this production. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, John Tanner, who's done a lot of shows for me as a composer, is doing the music, and he met a lady who plays the Irish whistle, and she apparently is the premier Irish whistle player in America. So he just mentioned the show to her, and she said, "Oh, I'd be happy to record the music for you."
She's very well known. She's with Cherish the Ladies.
Yeah. So, you know, that's what we're using, and John's creating a whole soundscape for the play, which starts with what we hear, what Molly hears. So, as the audience is coming in, we'll have that playing, and then as seems appropriate, we'll use some of the other little musical stuff that he's come up with.
And creating the world that Molly lives in is part of setting the scene, which without the visual is
right.
the music and, of course, the words, which
right.
are so
Well, and we've also decided that Molly's first monologue is going to start in the dark and be in the dark for quite a while, just to let people understand, oh, this is interesting. You know, there's nothing to do but listen to it.
Well, we're very grateful to be allowed into Molly's world and to see it through her eyes. Thank you both very much for a wonderful production.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Production of Talk Backs to Go is made possible by Orange Tree Imports and Audio for the Arts. Your host is Orin Schroeder. I'm Buzz Kemper. Our music is by Steve Tibbetts and is used by permission of the artist. Please find additional episodes of this podcast in iTunes under APT Talkbacks to Go. Thank you for listening.